This episode of the UAV Digest is sponsored by GoEngineer, provider of design, engineering, and 3D printing solutions for the aerospace and unmanned vehicles industries. To learn more, visit the UAVDigest.com/GoEngineer. You're listening to episode 269 of the UAV Digest. I'm Max Flight in Hartford, Connecticut.
And I'm David Vanderhoof in Fort Washington, Pennsylvania. Hello, Max. Hard to believe, but this is our last episode of 2018.
Wow. Yeah, that was fast. So, we'll have to make this a good one, and then we'll start again in January.
Yeah, it's our tradition to take a hiatus between Christmas and New Year's. So we'll be taking off next week. So this is our sign off, and then the next time we come on, we'll come on and we'll see how we did on our predictions and forecasts from 2018 and make some other ones for 2019. But we got a really good show. We've got updating news that's been we've been following all day long from Gatwick, standardization roadmap for ANSI, using business drones to monitor peat lands. I never thought we'd be talking about peat, but you know, a rolling stone grows no moss. Vodafone has our video of the week. Mexican passenger planes in our You're Grounded file. Drones protect nightjar nests. This is where our wildlife comes in, where we learn about a new species of wildlife that I never knew about.
Yeah, me either. It's not a new species, just our knowledge about the species is new.
And, of course, we've got self-driving rovers. And are you getting a drone for Christmas? What you need to do. So we've got a good show for us. So, Max, I think we should get started. What do you think?
Let's get started, David.
Now, this is where I've asked for years now to have a breaking news ticker tape, but my producer refuses to get me one. But today has been kind of dramatic over in the UK. This is the first instance where we've actually had an airport shut down because of illegal drone activity, I guess would be the best way to put it.
Chaos at the airport. There's been some drone flights, quite a few, over Gatwick. And at least as reported earlier, 760 flights had been grounded. 110,000 people have been stranded. Now, there's been a drone. It's been flying around the terminal, over the runway. And it's been doing this multiple times. And David, how's the airport been responding to this?
Well, for one, they basically shut the airport down. Two, they've had military aircraft as well as police aircraft try to chase it down. They have tried to jam it. And they can't locate the original origin of the signal where it's being flown from. So some of the speculation is that it is being programmed to fly patterns independently, not necessarily remotely, but they actually started bringing in things like Apache helicopters to see if they
can.
It really is. Law enforcement are confounded. Now, they didn't call it terrorism. However, they called it a deliberate disruption. I think that's a bit of a mincing of words. What do you think, Max?
Well, it seems like it's certainly not some one-off guy who's trying to get some nice video close-up of airplanes, because it's happening repeatedly, apparently. And there have also been some comments in some of these stories that the person operating this seems to show high levels of skill in evading the helicopters and the snipers that they have out there and all of that. So the question then is what's the intent?
Well, one of the busiest flight days of the year, people trying to get home for the holidays, etc. This is somebody that's doing it deliberately to disrupt the airport. It's really frightening. As I sit in my living room recording this, the ticker tape for CNN came across, and Prime Minister May has said that it's a deliberate act, and if they catch the person, they're going to, at minimum, have 5 years in jail. There's serious consequences to this.
Yeah, and there should be. So I don't know if it's a disgruntled airport employee, and that's the motivation for causing this disruption. Another possibility is it may not be strictly a terrorist activity at this point, but it might be someone kind of testing to see what kind of reaction results from this, maybe in by way of planning for some future kind of event or some future disruption or something. It could be something like that too, I imagine. Hopefully we'll find out. I mean, hopefully it won't stop and then no one is ever identified as causing this. So really like to see them catch someone. But another issue that comes out of this, David, the airport seemed to be completely unprepared for this kind of activity, or at least, you know, minimally prepared. And I mean, I think that's evidenced by the fact that it's these overflights have been happening repeatedly, and yet they still can't prevent them or catch the guy. So I imagine that this airport and probably every other major airport in the world, if they're smart, is going to try to take a look at what kind of anti-drone systems they can install to protect themselves from this kind of thing happening in the future.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. I mean, we can't say we weren't expecting this, but it's now here. So now we need to start dealing with it on a serious level. You know, I always say, you know, for every drone, there's an anti-drone program, but here's one where serious lives are being put in jeopardy, as well as disruption. I mean, it's one of the busiest flight weeks of the year. So we really need to figure out as an industry how to handle this.
Yeah, it should be a wake-up call.
I think, to use my big word for the day, it is a clarion call to our industry and to airports and airlines and law enforcement. I can imagine law enforcement right now in Great Britain is frustrated to no end. It's almost like he's toying with everybody, or the person who's flying the drone is toying with everybody and showing him that they're the smartest person in the room. And we hope that they get him. And then, of course, Max and I are both of the opinion of, you know, if they are caught and they are found guilty, they need to get the maximum term for jail or whatever, because this is just bad for everybody, our industry, as well as the people outside of it. Okay, Max, let's move on to standardization. And this is actually no more breaking news, because this was published today. The American National Standards Institute announced the publication of the Standardization Roadmap for Unmanned Aircraft Systems, version 1.0. Now, we talked about this earlier in the year. Now we've got the first document, the roadmap. And of course, you'll have access to that through our website at theuavdigest.com.
Right. ANSI, of course, is the standards organization that really has a pretty broad scope in terms of the kinds of standards they develop. And in this case, ANSI has an Unmanned Aircraft Systems Standardization Collaborative. And that's what's been working here on this document. And what they say that this was established to coordinate and accelerate the development of the standards and conformity assessment programs needed to facilitate the safe integration of unmanned aircraft systems into the national airspace system of the United States. So a lot of people were involved in putting this thing together, David. They didn't ask you and I, but that's okay. We're busy. But a lot of other folks were involved in this, weren't they?
Over 300 individuals from 175 private public sector organizations were in this to come with 64 issues examined in the roadmap. So it's a broad sector of our industry, and which is really kind of impressive that we can get this many people to put our input in to develop a uniformity, which we desperately need, and which is standardization.
Right. And as David said, this just came out today. So we haven't taken a deep dive into the document yet. It's 250 pages, so it's a pretty massive work. We mentioned the number of people involved in it. They actually list out the organizations and the names of the people who are involved. So it's kind of a who's who of stakeholders in the unmanned aircraft sector. But like David said, they identified 64 issue areas in this roadmap and 60 gaps that were identified. What's a gap in this case? Well, that means that there's no published standard or specification for that. And there's a table there in the roadmap. That's probably a good place to start. And they list each of the 60 gaps. They have a recommendation for what should take place, what action should take place. They note if any research and development is needed to address the gap. They also prioritize them, and they suggest organizations by name that ANSI thinks ought to address this need, this gap. So it looks like it's a great piece of work. As David said, we'll have a link in the show notes to the ANSI announcement, which includes a link to the actual document. If you want to take a look at the document and you go to the ANSI announcement, what you have to do, you have to put in some information about yourself, your name, your email address, and some things like that. They say that's just because they want to be able to send you announcements of further developments and so forth. So you do have to put that in to get to the PDF, the 250-page report. But that's not a big burden. Take a look at it. The bigger burden maybe is going through the 250 pages, David. But like I say, it's a nice piece of work.
And it's definitely a step in the right direction. The quicker we get standards, the quicker we get an industry that's coherent. And definitely take some time. And, you know, with the 250 pages, I'm sure that ANSI's looking for input. So there's going to be rounds going forward. So if there's something you see in one of those gaps that you might want to be able to help, I'm sure they want as much as participation as possible.
Yeah, they do call this version 1.0. So yeah, I think you're right, David. The implication is this will be revised over time.
One of my favorite books of all time is Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Hmm.
And they talk about bureaucracy and burying things in peat while it sits for a while. So I was fascinated by the word peatlands. That would be P-E-A-T, not P-E-T-E. And Australia are interested in monitoring their peat. And they're using ultra-high spatial resolution imagery from drones to check on their moss.
Yeah, it we kind of poke fun at it, but peatlands, as explained in this article we have from Drone Below, are kind of important ecologically for several reasons. They mention that peatlands are a major global carbon sink. They also regulate water flow, and there's some other reasons to really pay attention to these things. So researchers taking a look at this, they want to test the viability of creating hydrological models. And these models would monitor the hydrological changes and assist in the rehabilitation of damaged peatlands. So they're trying to test out the concept. And they're using a DJI Phantom 4 Pro along with the software AggieSoft photo scan software. I guess that's the spatial resolution software that they're using along with the Phantom. So, it really is kind of another example, David, of how we keep running across really interesting and unique applications for unmanned aircraft.
Yeah, and I just wanted you to be able to say hydrological.
I practiced.
So our next story is kind of our video of the week, and it's kind of Christmassy, and it seems just to fit the time of year. Vodafone conducts first drone delivery over a mobile 4G network. Christmas drone made a short 800-meter flight, delivering festive treats. I prefer sugar cookies or ricotta cookies as my festive treats. Do you have a preference, Max?
I've always liked ginger cookies.
Ah, he's a gingerbread man.
So this little drone used a 4G router, a portable 4G router. I think Vodafone's motivation for this was really to promote the strength of their network, their 4G network. They were trying to show that out here by the lighthouse, they could control the drone from a laptop, but not using the kinds of communications technology that you would normally use to fly a drone, but instead using 4G, the 4G network. And the drone itself is, like you say, David, it's kind of festive looking, isn't it?
It's a quadcopter sleigh filled with toys or festive treats. It's cute. It's a small quadcopter. It's got Santa Claus in it. It's very appropriate for this time of year. So
yeah.
Vodafone was demonstrating something, but also having some fun also. So
that's right.
We'll call that our video of the week, which brings me to my where are you all? We want your videos of the week. Please send them to feedback@theUAVDigest.com. You're going to get them in a couple of days. If you get your new drone and you fly it and take video, send it to us, because Max and I are incapable of operating a drone for ourselves, and we like watching everybody else's flying them and video. So
I can operate a drone, David. I just tend to have a tendency to crash it a lot.
Okay. I don't have any luck at all, but evidently my co-host can operate a drone, sort of. The next story is, we talked about earlier on Airplane Geeks this week. However, we need to touch base on it because it belongs in our Your Grounded file. But in light of the news today at Gatwick, this story sort of seems like it's minor. And that is from the New York Daily News, Boeing 737 damaged in possible drone crash near U.S.-Mexico border. Aeromexico Flight 773, a Boeing 737, was struck in the nose on final approach at Tijuana International. The damage was substantial, and clearly the radome is shattered. In a cabin recording, crew members can be heard saying they heard a pretty loud bang, asking the control tower to check if the nose was damaged. It's currently under investigation. There's damage there, and there is not damage like we've seen before where we have blood and birds, etc. However, no one's been able to show what's inside the radome, you know, were there pieces of a drone or whatever. So I don't know. I don't know how to read this one, Max.
Yeah, I'm not ready to declare this a drone strike just yet. It's possible, might even be likely, but and the investigation really should be able to tell us what this was. But like you say, it doesn't really seem like a bird strike because of the lack of at least obvious evidence. But the nose, the radome is crushed in several places. There's some breaks in it. I've said on the other show that it looks like more damage to me than you'd find with something relatively lightweight, like a Phantom or something like that. I don't know. It just looks bigger and heavier to me. But it's hard to say. There were no injuries. The plane landed without any particular incident. But it is very disconcerting. And it also does it does seem like the crew heard a noise but didn't see anything. So there's no observation from the flight crew of a drone or anything really hitting it. So that is going to rely on the investigation. But yeah, I'm sure there's always a lot of forensic evidence in these kinds of things. So they ought to be able to figure it out, I think.
So let's talk about glaringly obvious things compared to birds that evidently land on the ground and look like trees in their hottest spot and have a very interesting name called nightjars. Never knew about this bird ever before today, but that's why we do this show, because Max and I learn more about everything else in the universe besides just drones. So
today's the lesson in birds. And these things are apparently found in almost every part of the world, so that makes it even more unusual that we've never heard of these things. But they're protected, and some ecologists at Cardiff University want to study these things. They want to see if they can detect them. Currently, they're often found by searching on foot, but what they want to do is make sure that during forestry work or in construction areas, that these poor birds aren't disturbed. So bring in the drones.
Yeah, and of course, Max had to use the word pilot study for a drone program. But that being said, it was really kind of neat. These birds nest on the ground, and they tend to blend in with the ground. They are really hard to locate. So you're flying these drones and using like infrared and other sensors so that you can tell where these endangered birds are. We'll have a link to the Wikipedia page as well as the phys.org article. It's another interesting way that people are just using drones and their ability to scan large areas quickly. And precisely that you wouldn't necessarily get otherwise, which, you know, and evidently the drones don't seem to disturb these ground-loving birds.
Yeah, that was very clear from the article. And I think that's one of the things that the researchers wanted to determine. Not only, you know, using thermal imaging, can they find the birds, but do they disturb the birds in that process? And they tried detection from different altitudes, right, to see if there was any difference in that. But the conclusion was that they were able to detect these birds without disturbing them, which, of course, is an ideal outcome of this.
So let's talk about remote ground vehicles. And this is from our friend Trevor on our Slack listener team. Now, if you want to be like Trevor and be in the know, you can do that by sending us an email to feedback@theuavdigest.com, and we'll send you an invite so you can be part of the Slack team. So thank you, Trevor, for sending us this article. And it's from ESA.int. Our activities, space engineering technology, self-driving rovers tested in Mars like Morocco. Who knew Morocco was like Mars? But evidently, it's a perfect environment to test remotely piloted or remote ground vehicles.
Yeah, because the idea is let's put some of these on Mars someday. So you need to design them, obviously, then test them. And this location turns out to be a good one to test them. So these three rovers have been driving around for a couple of weeks out there. A big support crew, 40 engineers, and they're looking to test the automated navigation systems on these rovers. And they say they've had some excellent results so far. They've made a 1.3 kilometer journey entirely autonomous. And this was kind of an interesting aside, David. It says that when it was on its autonomous mission, a science element on the rover triggered a scientific acquisition on its own, it says, unprompted. It seems the rover spotted some strange-shaped stones and then asked the engineers to to move into a better position to take more images. So I guess this thing has some intelligence on its own.
Skynet's coming.
Yeah, yeah. But there is a drone connection, all right? So these are, well, an aerial drone. So we've been talking about these rovers being autonomous vehicles on the ground. But there is a drone component to this little story as well.
Yeah, ESA, or the European Space Agency, flew a drone to map the locations, then producing the digital imagery so that the rovers could use that satellite imagery for their autonomy. So you've got a pair working together where when we deploy these to Mars, you'll have maybe the drones acting as scouts for the rovers. So and developing their own conscience and then taking over Mars, luckily, and not the world. I joke, but it's coming. But it is kind of neat that you have the Sherpa TT, and it's decided that it needed to go look at some other rocks, and that was a good thing. So thank you again. Thanks to Trevor. And of course, thank you to all of our people who are on our Slack listener team. We have a good time with you guys. It was fun following the whole Gatwick thing today on our Slack team, because here in the States, we weren't getting the news like they were over there. So that was kind of cool. So is someone getting a drone for Christmas? Well, if you live in Raleigh, North Carolina, you've got a place to fly and a place to go. And this was from the newsobserver.com.
The city council in Raleigh, North Carolina, they approved a policy that specifies where and when you can fly drones in city parks. And then the city parks department created a website with rules and a map showing where you can take off and land and all of that. I think it's a really interesting webpage. This may be another example of best practice that maybe other locations might take a look at and consider creating on their own. So there's just a lot of good information in it. It's got some conditions that need to be met. They list, for example, complying with all local, state, and federal laws. But then they link to the FAA's Know Before You Fly site, also the AMA, the Academy of Model Aeronautics, National Model Aircraft Safety Code. But other conditions, you can't take off or land in parks outside of designated park hours, and you can't operate to harass wildlife or members of the public. And there's a lot of other information here posted as well. And I just thought, David, they did a really, really good job of kind of bringing an awful lot of information together and presenting it in a way that's, I don't think it's really overpowering for people who might be new to owning and flying drones. I just think they've done a really good job.
Actually, I was thinking it's a really, I hate to use the word safe space, but it's a welcoming idea. Here, we're giving you a place for you to learn. Here's what you need to know, and where you can apply that, and other people can help you. It's a very positive way of taking the approach. We tend to have a lot of don't do this, don't do that, right? This is, we want you to fly. Here's a place to fly. Here's how to fly. It's a really different spin, and that's really a good thing, I think.
Yeah, as you were describing it, David, and before you used the word positive, that's exactly the word that was going through my head. It is a really positive approach, and it comes off that way. So take a look at it, and if you have a need to create something similar for your local area, you might want to take a look at this and consider what they've done.
Congratulations to the City Council of Raleigh, North Carolina. They did a really good job.
All right, David, I think we'll wrap it up. I want to thank you all for listening. This has been episode 269 of the UAV Digest. As always, you can find us at the UAVdigest.com. It's got show notes for every episode. If you want to go straight to the show notes for this episode, you probably have figured out the magic key by now. That's at the UAVdigest.com/269.
And of course, we want you to be part of our social welcoming area. You can do that, become being part of our Slack listener team. Like I said before, send us a request to feedback@theuavdigest.com. Or you can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/UAVdigest, on Twitter at UAVdigest. And of course, we'd love for you to leave feedback for us on your whatever podcast catcher you use, either Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts or Stitcher.com, so other people can find us. And while it might be too late for Christmas, you might be able to purchase something from our Cafe Press store. But most of all, I think Max and I want to thank you for listening to us for another whole year. This year's been a bit challenging for us, and we have appreciated everything you've done for us. And I know Max was really appreciative of everything that, and all of the loving emails and condolences, because we do miss Drone Mama. And so I guess with that, I'm going to say Happy New Year. See you in 2019. This is David in Fort Washington.
And Max in Hartford.
Thank you for listening.